Yeah.
All right. So, this is also my very first time doing this. So,
yeah.
So it's like a test round.
I can be
round.
Your first.
It's like a test round for all of us. So, me and Kayla already started a podcast.
Uh-huh.
It's called The Daily Unpacking. Cool name, actually.
I like that.
Kayla came up with it. And we started off by just, you know, documenting our day kind of thing. We were going to do it every day of our travels, but then obviously, you know, you fall off.
Yeah, stuff, like, every day. Like any that. Doing anything every day is like, it's a big
yeah.
ask.
Even though it's just like 5 minutes, it's still hard.
It's a big ask.
Yeah. So I went online, and obviously we've known each other for a little bit, so I'm going to have you introduce yourself in just a bit. I have prepared some questions. I don't want to ask you all of them because it's more like 100 questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of them suit you better than others. And mm-hmm. there are some questions I want to ask you that are not on this list.
Cool.
I'm going to take a sip of my coffee for those of you that can't see me. Yeah. It's going to flow. It's just how it is.
Cool.
Flow. We know a lot about flow. You know a lot about flow. And for those of you that don't know a lot about flow, flow was something that is completely new to me when I got here to Pi. I didn't even know it was called flow. I just knew that it was called fire spinning.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't you tell all of us what flow is, how you get into it, who you are, and yeah.
That's a big ask, but
okay. It's a big ask. Yeah.
So flow, or specifically, I guess what we're talking about is the flow arts.
Yeah.
Is kind of like within the wheelhouse of dancing and juggling, where it's more object manipulation.
Yeah.
The goal and why it's called the flow arts is to achieve what's called flow state. And so when you say flow, it applies to way more than just what we do.
Yeah.
And much in the same way that Kung Fu is like a way of life that you can apply as like a philosophy to anything.
Yeah.
You know, you can do the dishes and be doing Kung Fu. You don't need to be doing martial arts.
Yeah.
You can be doing flow in everything that you do. And the easiest way to describe to someone who's never done it is like, if you've ever brushed your teeth or maybe driven home from work and just kind of like lost yourself to thoughts and your brain was, your body was just on autopilot, the next thing you know, you're pulling into your driveway and you're like, wait, how did I get here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And you just snap back into reality.
Yeah.
Well, you are in flow state. Your yeah. body knows where to go. Your mind is able to do it without you thinking about it, and uh-huh. you can be elsewhere. And that's yeah. why it's used as a moving meditation.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what flow is. And we achieve flow through props and object manipulation and repeating patterns of movement that we learn to yeah. create cool shapes and cool processes and dances. And, you know, you train those to the point where it becomes a dance, it becomes a flow state, and you really lose yourself to it.
Yeah.
My first introduction to this was about 8 years ago. I saw somebody using 2 glow sticks on strings, and it looked like a nunchuck, and they looked like a Jedi. And I was like, if a nunchuck Jedi is a thing that exists in real life, and I'm not that before I die, I was living my life wrong. Yeah.
That's so, really cool.
Yeah.
And so you saw somebody spinning like a homemade prop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that just became your life for the next 8 years, almost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so some of the background on me, I grew up in like a Muay Thai, like boxing gym that my dad owned. And so martial arts has always been kind of like a background for some of the ways I saw things.
Uh-huh.
You know, shortly after injuring my head too much during sparring and going, this isn't for me anymore, I did dance for about like 5 or 6 years and theater for about 5 or 6 years. And when I found fire performance and flow arts, I was like, holy crap. Like, not only is the mild pyro inside of me going crazy
holy
happy
shit,
over this,
yeah.
I can apply my theatrics and my dance and my martial arts all in one place.
And I can put it on fire.
And I can light it on fire. Exactly.
That's insanely cool. So, obviously we met in Pi
mm-hmm.
about 4.5 months ago. The very first time you came to Pi, what brought you here? Like, what? How did you find this place? How did you hear about it? Why did you stay?
So my buddy Remy was the first person to tell me about Pi. And he recommended that I come at the end of my tour of Southeast Asia, which was about 5 months, because I wouldn't want to leave. And he was incredibly right. Like, I got to Pi at the end of my trip. Yeah. I spent 2 weeks here. I loved it so much that I wanted to come back. I got an offer from Ryan to work with the circus and teach here during the busy season. And I was like, I want to just like jump on board and say 100% yes. Being a realistic person, I was like, let me get home first and figure some stuff out. I got home, figured nothing out, and 2 weeks later I bought a plane ticket. So, you know.
And now you stayed here.
And now I'm here.
So yep. You've been back and forth ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And when was the first time?
Oh, last time I saw you. Really? That was the first time I had been here.
Really?
Yeah.
Serendipity of things, man. I thought that you, like, when I first saw you here, I was like, first I thought that you lived here.
Uh-huh.
And that you've been here a fucking forever. And, but that's cool. That you just found it at the same time as I did, basically.
I think that's what's cool about community, is it just gets you tapped in, and then once you're tapped in, like, a lot of people assume that it took you a long time to build those connections or relationships.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of familiarity with people. But that's what's really cool about the Flow community, is it's incredibly healthy,
yeah,
accepting, and supportive.
Yeah,
so if
you
go somewhere and you connect with other people who do this, mm-hmm, it can seem like you've known them forever. It can seem like you've been around for forever. And it's really just the fact that they're accepting you with open arms.
Yeah, and you are also an open-minded person, you know. That's how you fit in so well. But then, when you found Pi just 4 or 5 months ago, you must have known about Flow community fire spinning before that.
Yeah, well, I knew there was a community for it up here for sure.
Uh-huh.
And I've been heavily involved in the Flow Arts community in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And more recently, been doing some more international stuff, going to Philippine Flow Fest, Flow Mads, checking out different circus-y scenes, you know, when I travel. It's primarily what I do.
Yeah.
It's one of the awesome things about the community is that it exists globally. And it's not too hard to find the local piece of your community, and if it's
a narrow niche, that's why.
Yeah, and you can just tap into it wherever you go. You know, I know if I go to France, if I go to Germany, I can find what I call them flow homies. I can find flow homies.
Love that.
Yeah, I can find some flowmies to connect with, and you know, immediately I'll just have quick access to a whole bunch of friends.
That's amazing. That is really, really cool. And then, maybe I can tap into these questions. So Flow Arts and Pi, and I'm just like refreshing my mind. Yeah, briefing my mind a little bit. Because obviously, I think the only person who's probably going to listen to this is Kayla.
For now,
right?
My friends might listen to it.
They get tired
of hearing me talk sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, other times they're like, hey, that was kind of wise. And I'm like, it's a rare occurrence, trust me.
So what's your goal with all this? Like, because you've been doing this for 8 years now. You're incredibly talented. You have so many skills. You do all the fucking props, and you do them well, and you even teach them all. Because one thing is, like, you know, you pick up a prop, and you're able to, like, spin it around, and it looks cool. Another thing is being able to teach it, right? So... and I know that you already teach. You do workshops here. What's your goal? Like, do you want to continue teaching? Do you want to, like, have, like, an own little Muay Thai gym for yourself? It's like a
not a Muay Thai gym, but
like a Flow Arts gym.
Dojo. Flow Arts dojo. I think I love performing, but teaching is really my passion.
Cool.
And teaching performance even is, like, even more so.
Yeah.
You know, training performers is just, like, I love it. Because, like, I see them on stage, and I'm like, oh, my babies.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I can imagine that.
That's, yeah. So my goal, short and long term, are kind of in sync. Like, I want to continue teaching, I continue performing, because performing is how I get people interested in learning. And the reason I like teaching is because with Flow Arts, I found a community that is so healthy and so, like, supportive and honestly just kind of wholesome in the way that I really want it to be. Like, it's a community of people who not only will, like, hang out and teach you things and invest in you as a person, but will also party with you and invite you back to the house to, like, kick it with the homies. You know, like,
yeah.
You don't find that everywhere. And so, and so what ends up happening is, like, when I'm teaching people, I try to teach them the culture of the community just as much as I'm trying to teach them the moves of the art form.
Yeah, man.
Because I think that's so important.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It's like yoga teachers. Like, I see Harry do the same thing here when he, like, teaches yoga. It's more like I'll introduce you to yoga and then I'll teach you yoga, right?
Yeah.
Because I've been to different, you know, now using yoga as an example, been to yoga classes, and they were like, okay, like, put your body in this pose. Yeah. And I'm like, why am I doing this, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big part, yeah.
Totally. And for me, I think one of the biggest draws to this art form, as opposed to another one, is the community.
Yeah.
It's so big. It's so helpful. It's
and
so
it's growing.
Nice. It's growing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think...
Because of you, it is growing.
Well, and then that's what I want, is I want to, like, help contribute to the growth of a healthy organism.
Yeah.
You know, and the same way that, like, you know, you have those old Zen martial arts masters who aren't just telling you, like, wax on, wax off, this is how you do a move. They're saying, this is the philosophy of life. This is, you know, a way to be compassionate and also reserved and, like, all that stuff. Like, that's...
Yeah. So it teaches you wisdom at the same time as it teaches you, like, performance.
And I learned that wisdom from my students and by messing up myself. And, you know, it's not anything that I just intrinsically know. It's just...
Yeah.
It was all...
Practice.
Shared with me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And when it comes to finances and how you plan on, because you're probably going to, you know, if you want to continue teaching, are you looking to do something with it, like, 20 years down the road? I imagine that you would want to live off of this, and you'd be able to, you know.
Oh, I do live off of it.
Because you already are, right?
Yeah.
Because you already are.
Yeah.
But do you see yourself, like, keeping it at this level in the next 15 years, 10 years, or do you see it escalating somehow?
Oh, I mean, I'm an ambitious person.
Yeah.
You know, that's just
Which is why I'm asking. I know this answer can be fun.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the way I see flow arts in general is kind of where skateboarding was in the 80s and the early 90s, right? It was just taken off.
Yeah.
You know, before the X Games was around, like, it was just this thing that looked like punks did, and but there was a community for it, you know? And, like, companies like Vans and stuff, they were very small. And then what happened was skateboarding blew up in a big way.
Yeah.
And then what happened? All the companies that were there in the beginning had a tiny piece of that pie, and as the pie grew, so did their slice, and now they're multi-million-dollar companies. You know, and you have somebody like Tony Hawk, who probably never thought he was ever going to be famous, being one of the most famous people, not only in the sport, but just a household name in general.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to be a skateboarder to know who Tony Hawk is.
Nope.
And not that I ever want to be the Tony Hawk of fucking flow arts, but what I do want is to be one of those people, whether it's supporting people with props, supporting people with knowledge, that helps the community grow so that when the community is larger, it's something that also supports me and my lifestyle. So I think going the route of becoming a regular teacher at a studio that I either co-own or manage, and that's something that my partner Tani is working on, is definitely in the cards for the future. And I want to continue traveling and continue trying to share this in different places. And so it is a lot more of the same, but it's also a lot more of the growth of the same, making it bigger, making it larger, more accessible to people.
Yeah.
I would love, for example, to start an after-school program where I do this for free instead of having to charge because I need to make my living off of it.
Yeah.
And so I hope to become at a point where I'm financially stable enough with the teaching and performing that I'm doing that I'm also able to give it freely more often in contexts that would make me feel better.
Yeah, I agree with that. So then, to pull it back to skateboarding and how that blew up, I can also imagine that competitions were something that definitely, like, blew it up because somebody wanted to show off their skills. They're like, I've been practicing this thing for fucking 10 years.
Yeah.
And now there's this ramp here with 15 other people that are gonna jump around with me and I'm going to have a price, you know. It's going to be like a money price or whatever.
Yeah, well, and there's a big debate on competition in the flow arts community.
Interesting.
Some people welcome it because it's like, that's what's going to make it larger. That's what's going to, like, help push that to become a larger thing, because then all of a sudden there's a desire for the ambition type to push harder. Other people are like, it will destroy the sense of community we have about freely sharing knowledge because we don't want to have secret tech or moves that win you competitions or get you whatever. And, you know, like for example, in LA, the flow scene is a bit more competitive because that's how people are all making their money, and, like, their signature moves and things like that, like, they don't want to share that information.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you go up to somewhere like Colorado, Portland, San Francisco, everyone's like, yeah, I do this performing, but also I want to show you what I can do.
Yeah.
And so I can see the argument for both.
Yeah.
I would hope that competition is accepted in a healthy manner. Like, for example, Equilibrium just had a giant dance-off-y kind of flow competition, and apparently, I've not heard a bad thing about it, and everyone loved it, and I think it's the vibe and the energy with which the competition is held.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
Yeah, like, Tim Goddard had a fire poi, like, fire performance at the Olympics. Cool. Like he managed a giant fire performance, and so like that, it's definitely coming into the mainstream in big ways in different places.
Yeah,
you know, like for example, if fire performance or flow arts with different props became an Olympic sporting event, holy shit!
Yeah,
like, just 0 to 60, you know, overnight.
Yeah, because it's not impossible for me to imagine, like. Because there's like a rhythmic gymnastics,
yeah.
Right? It's not impossible in my mind.
Oh, it's totally like that.
Knowing,
it's in that vein.
Exactly. Knowing that, you know, gaming is about to be an Olympic sport.
Uh-huh.
You know, flow arts is not impossible. Like, I so see
coming.
Like a group, because there are like group rhythmic gymnastics.
Yeah.
And there's singles, right?
The thing that I worry about is, and I think part of this is not just competition, but also just kind of because of the capitalist nature of the economy, is that people feel like art is now marketable, and if you are not able to market your art, that it's not worthy of doing.
Yeah.
Like, for example, everyone who feels like they're not a good singer, I hear often say they don't like to sing. Mm. Singing is enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm not a very good singer.
Yeah.
I love to do it.
I share that with you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, just because it's not something that you would market or sell doesn't mean it's not something you should express or enjoy doing.
I agree.
And so I never want Flo to feel that way to anyone. I don't want anyone to feel like I'm not good enough, so therefore I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a balance that's there, and I hope the culture that exists in the flow arts community is what continues on if it ever does become competitive.
Yeah.
And inevitably does become very large, because it is. I don't see the shrinking, you know?
It's not going to... And it's such simple, you know, entertainment, and there's no shortage of events in the world
that
would
plug
somebody that knows how to spin shit that are on fire, you know? So I only see this growing. It's only it's amazing. It's so good. We're having a sip of the same. You have an ice mocha too.
Ice mocha.
Fuck man, it's so good. It's like a dollar.
It's a 30 baht. It's a dollar.
And it lasts for like a solid, you know, 40 minutes if you drink it slowly.
If you drink it slowly,
yeah. It's big, yeah.
Or it can last like 2 minutes if you just jug it, which is hard because it's delicious.
Yeah.
Sweetened condensed milk, man. Everywhere in Southeast Asia, they get you with that. They're like, oh, you want a fruit smoothie? You're like, oh, yeah, I can have a fruit smoothie. That's healthy. And then they just pour like a half a cup of sweetened condensed milk in there. Yeah, and you're just like, oh, man, this is no longer healthy, but it's so delicious. Then the next time they'll ask you, sweet milk? And you're like, I should say no, but I'm gonna say yes.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's move on from like flow arts, because it's definitely, you know, a big topic around here. We're in Pai, we're at A Paradise, which hosts the biggest fire show. We say Northern Thailand. I don't know if there's even another fire show in Thailand.
Well, that's why we can say...
Yeah.
The biggest one in Northern Thailand.
To make sure that we are actually saying we're saying it is the biggest show in Northern Thailand. I've been blessed to be part of it twice now, I think. Twice? Three times. It's been fucking awesome. I love being here. And it's only a chance for me to come back here. Like, when I say goodbye on Wednesday, it's going to be a temporary one.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm going to go through some of these questions. Because the idea behind this podcast is more like a, you know, a traveler's thing.
Okay.
Right? But that's perfect because the first part I wanted it to be, you know, about you and about what you do, and that's how it's going to be with everybody, and how it's going to be more like a general like a traveler's.
Okay.
You know,
and it's a good introduction because Flo is such a huge motivator in part of my travels.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'll probably be hearing about it a lot, so it's good
that's
to have that.
Perfect. So. Now I already know I brought you to Pai the first time. That's something I wanted to ask you. And then, when was the first time you left your home country? Because you're from San Francisco.
Yeah.
You were born and raised there.
I was born there. I was raised all over the country. I moved around a lot as a kid.
Cool, yeah.
I think that's what gave me a bit of the wanderlust.
Yeah. I imagine that.
Yeah.
And then, when was the first time you left the United States?
So, when I was like 13, my family went on a cruise. No, 14. 14, I think. My family went on a cruise, and I got to go to the Bahamas and to Haiti and all that stuff. It was very structured, but it was my first time out of the country, and it definitely did dip my toe in going like, oh, this is totally something that's attainable. Because I feel like a lot of people, you know, like, I come back home, and people are like, oh my gosh, you did that thing. Like, I wish I could do that. And I'm like,
you totally can. Yeah, man.
There's nothing stopping you.
Nope.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, my responsibilities, or oh, this. And it's like, yeah, you don't think I've had those?
Exactly,
like,
and you're also choosing them. Like,
you want
to go there.
Yeah, you choose
them. It's prioritization, right?
Yep.
You're choosing to do things that you're doing.
Yeah.
But when was the first time you left by yourself without your parents?
I went to Thailand with a partner 5 or 6 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, Thailand. I've been to Thailand. This is my third time here. I love it so much. It's my favorite country I visited outside of the U.S.
Cool.
But yeah, I've been to India, Cambodia, Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines. I've been to Mexico, Haiti, Jamaica.
You've brought flow arts all over there, or
everywhere I've gone. Like when I was in India, I was there with Performers Without Borders, and it's like this circus, traveling circus, and we would go to low income, impoverished areas, or like the slums, or like the villages that are really remote where no one even speaks English.
That's so cool.
And like put on a show for people who've never seen this stuff
before.
That's
fucking awesome.
And then we would work with the kids at like the community centers or orphanages or what have you, and just stay there for a month and teach them performance arts and how to juggle. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was so rewarding. It was so much fun.
I can imagine. Yeah, that sounds fucking cool. And then I know all these. So maybe you've already touched on this, but what was the core motivation for you to decide to start traveling? Other than you knew that you were able to because you have been moving around when you were younger. Like, what got you to be like, okay, this is what I want to do?
So in the United States, this guy named Donald Trump won the election. I'm kidding.
That's hilarious.
I honestly just think it came from wanderlust. I said, when I was a kid, I moved around a bunch. I can't really live anywhere for longer than 3 years without getting a little shaky and being like, what's next? I feel stagnant if I don't.
Yeah.
And I think that...
I've heard that so many times.
Yeah, man. Like that traveler ADD just ramps up the older I get.
Yeah.
And Pi actually is the first place where I'd be like, oh, I could actually stay here for a while.
Yeah.
Use it maybe as a home base.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's really what it came from, is the more you travel, the more you want to travel.
Yeah.
And the more you feel like when you're not traveling that you should be, you know.
But that's because that's something that I hear from people all the time when I see them, or when I ask, my friends back home that I went to school with, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? Like, what are you waiting for? Like, after your degree, you got your job. Like, now you've gone to school for this fucking diploma. And now you're going to go to job. Like, what are you looking forward to? And all of them go like, well, I would like to go travel. It's like, why don't you already go do that? Like, what are you waiting for?
You don't need a diploma to do that.
You do not need a diploma to go travel.
Yeah. There's no certification for you're ready to leave the country.
Exactly.
I think especially in the United States, it's a bigger prospect because, like, we're bordering Mexico and Canada, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like in Europe, they're way more likely to travel because, like, the distance it takes us to go from one state to another is one country to another for them. You know, you drive 100 miles in one direction. They're speaking a different language.
Yeah.
There's different foods, different culture, different community, different architecture. In America, you drive 100 miles, and you're in the same damn place, you know? And so I think traveling is a prospect for us because, like, we don't – it's a non-concept until you leave the country, which is a big investment. Like, it costs at least $500 to get across the Pacific or Atlantic.
Yeah.
You know?
And now you're in the financial situation you are in the United States. You know, the middle class is getting smaller and closer to the lower class.
Yeah.
So $500 is not something you can just whip out of your back pocket and be like, hey, I'm going to go travel.
It's not.
So something else popped into my head when you said that. Whatever, we can move on. Did you have any expectations from family or friends when you decided to leave?
Expectations like what?
Like, did you have anybody tell you that you're doing a mistake? Did you have anybody telling you that we want you back here, this is what you should be doing? Like, did you have anybody trying to interfere in your decision to leave?
Yes and no.
Okay.
In a beautiful way. Not necessarily. That's good. Everyone was very supportive.
But that's good.
Of going.
We want to hear that.
Yeah. But the no is also, it's a beautiful story, actually. Uh-huh. So when I was going to do the Performers Without Borders thing in India, I was doing fundraisers and having some parties, and I had all these friends in Portland who had never really hung out with each other. They'd seen each other every once in a while on things, but they never really connected. Mm-hmm. And I constantly told them, like, hey, guys, you would all love each other so much. You need to hang out. Like, mm-hmm. I love you guys. I can see why you guys would be friends. And they're like, yeah, I just don't have time. Or I always spend that time with you. And I was like, fine. And so I had, like, three different events that were, like, going away parties / fundraiser things that they all went to. And they all spent a lot of time there because they were all lingering towards the end. And so the five of them, or six of them, would hang out, we'd all drink tea, and they'd really get to know each other really well. And the last party, the last night, right before I go, they're like, when are you coming back home? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I might just go live somewhere. I have no idea if I'm even coming home. Yeah. And they're like, no, you have to come home. Like, we miss you. You know, you have to come back. And I was like, I don't know if I would. I don't know what would bring me back or what's waiting for me here. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, what if you had a place to live? And I'm like, I mean, I'm not worried about having a house. And they're like, no. What if we all moved into a house together and saved you a room? And I was like, okay, wait a minute. If my 4 or 5 best friends moved into a house specifically to save me a room, to get me to come back to the country, I would not be able to say no to living with my best friends. Yeah. Like, literally living in the most intentional of homes, you know, that was made for me, you know? And I never thought that was going to happen. So I'm in India for 2 months, and they send me pictures and videos of them all hanging out. I gave my buddy Pete my tea set, which is what we all kind of did together. We all had tea together. And so they'd send me pictures of them all hanging out having tea. And part of me was like, oh, yeah, now that I'm gone, you're all hanging out together. But the other part was really happy that they found each other finally.
Yeah.
So 2 months in, I get a video call, and it's all of them. And they're like, hey, you're coming back home. And I was like, I don't know. And they're like, no, you're coming back. We all just signed the lease on a new house because we found out all of our leases ended at the same time and we're saving you a room. So that was the deal. And I was like, oh, you motherfuckers. I guess I'm coming back.
That's cool.
So like that month I bought my plane ticket back. And then after my tour was over, I went back home and I lived with them for a year. And
That was so cool. An
amazing year.
That's beautiful.
It was so great. And so I did have people calling me back home.
But those are good expectations, though.
It was the best expectation.
That is awesome.
And they supported me. They knew I was going out and doing, like, fun, good things for me and other people.
Hi, Alok. That's so cool. And then I have, this is more, like, traveler's questions, so I want to keep moving on this. What is the most important lesson, or lessons, you can name three, you have learned while being on the road? There's probably a lot. There's fuck tons, because there's probably one new thing every single day, if not more than one thing every single day that you learn. But something that, you know, stuck with you, something that was implemented into your core.
A few things. I think especially traveling in places that are not quite as touristy is a huge thing that people should do. It's really easy to be in a country and spend all of your time in places that appeal to Western mindsets and palates and things like that.
That's what you resonate with.
Yeah, because that's what you resonate with, as you know. But you're not in another country to do what feels safe.
Yeah.
So I guess the first thing to do would be to put yourself in new and interesting situations and not just do what reminds you of home.
Yeah.
You know? And that being said, that directly links to the second part, which is respect the local culture and customs and make sure that you're leaving their country and their community in a better spot than you left it.
Than you
arrived to it in.
Yeah.
Because, like, so many people come, they take advantage of the difference in economy, they get chippies to party, and then leave.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, like, while that's okay sometimes, you know, everyone needs a cathartic release of, you know, energy, whether it's through partying or whatever. At the same time, you want to make sure that somehow they benefited from you being there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these people, like, that's their life. People coming and going and coming and going. And you don't want them to resent the people coming and going.
Yeah.
You want them to appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
And for every local I meet who has a smile on their face and, like, makes me feel at home, there's another one that I can tell has been burned. And they're like, oh, damn, people coming in my country. And
yeah, man.
I don't think people are empathetic enough of going, like, you know, if you go on a rice paddy tour, and you're walking around rice paddies, you're seeing people work and doing whatever, like, how would you feel if you were at work, at home, and some tour guide brought a bunch of, I don't know, like Japanese tourists or German tourists or something through your job, and they all started taking pictures of you like you were some exotic thing to them, and you were just supposed to deal with it, and you weren't benefiting from it. You're not getting paid for that, people taking pictures. You know, you would probably be like, the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember one time I was going through the jungle, and I walked by, and I was like, this is such a beautiful place, and there was this person, and I saw their home, and, like, they waved at me, and I waved at them, and it was really nice. But then part of me realized, I was like, man, if I was back home and somebody literally just walked through my backyard, I might not just wave at them.
You're American-minded also, though.
Yeah, no, I am.
I'm going to go get my fucking shotgun.
yeah. But it's just, you know, and you're right. You want to break your conceptions of home.
Yeah.
But you also just want to make sure what you're doing is empathetic and compassionate.
100%. I agree with that fully. That was two. Do you have another one?
Oh, yes. Let's see, the third one. And this is for all my hippies out there. I love you guys, but you gotta protect your feet. like you don't always have to wear shoes, and I understand the wants to not do it, but like protecting your body in general is really important, but your feet are what's taking you everywhere. And if you're walking barefoot everywhere and you get a cut and you don't get that treated and you don't put on shoes and it gets infected and then you still don't put on shoes, like there's a part of me that is like, well, you had that.
Well, you're asking for it.
So like,
wear fucking shoes.
Wear shoes when you're going. India taught me that because India is definitely a place where you want to wear shoes. But you know, like, don't let that take away from enjoying yourself. And I like taking my shoes off at the beach and in a nice grass field as much as the next guy.
Yeah.
But just, you know, protect yourself.
Yeah. I like that.
Whether it's shoes or sunscreen or whatever that means to you.
Uh-huh.
Just take care of your body.
I love that. There's a lot of people walking around here with barefoot or barefoot. I reacted on it strongly when I first got here. And there was a lot of people talking about it. It's like, you cannot go without shoes at walking street because you're disrespecting the culture. And the Thai people are going to look at you and judge you. And then, but every day I go to walking street, there's one or two or three people that are walking around there without shoes. And I'm not, I'm trying to, be aware of my judgment, be aware of stuff like that. So I'm not trying to, even though I'm trying to adapt to the culture, I'm not adapting to the judgments of the culture. You're like, I'm not going to judge you for not wearing shoes. But we see it every day. We see it all the time. So it's definitely
I also think there's a difference between walking street, which is literally the white part of town, versus like a traditional like Thai business.
Yeah.
When there's a bunch of tourists and hippies walking around in the place for tourists and hippies, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
But when you're walking into a business that's like a local business and like you're barefoot, the reason it's a custom is it's not a judgment about like wear shoes because that's arbitrary. It's because like in their culture, it's not hygienic to not wear shoes because you take your shoes off when you enter their house.
Yeah.
If you're not wearing shoes, then basically it's like walking around their house with your shoes on.
Yeah, correct.
And so imagine if somebody came into your house with a carpet and whatever and they just left their shoes on.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it'd be the same thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So when they see that, they're not judging you because, oh, that person doesn't wear shoes.
No, it's because you're dragging shit from outside.
You're
going
to drag shit from the outside indoors and they try to keep that area nice.
Exactly.
And so that's really what it's about.
Yeah, love that. So here I have another one, which... because I also want to reach to people that are, like, on the edge of wanting to travel, but are, like, unsure because they have responsibilities, like we touched on earlier. So, what would you say to someone that is wanting to travel but is unsure about the execution?
The easiest way to do it is to wait until your lease is up. Wait until, you find a good point with your work, like, which might never happen. And, like
you got to create it.
You got to create that. You got to create that. And that's the thing is, like... you want to leave as little responsibility at home as possible.
Bills, credit card bills.
All those things.
Student loans.
And here's what happens is people will come traveling. They'll visit Thailand for 2 weeks. They'll be like, damn it, I want to stay here longer.
Yeah.
But I have an apartment that the lease is not up at. Or I have a dog. Or I have a cat. Like, I am a animal person. I don't own any pets.
Yeah.
Because I can't be responsible for a pet now in my life. You know? And... making sure that your responsibility, even your physical things, are something that's easier to deal with, like, is what's going to make traveling a more realistic possibility.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I downsized from having a whole home worth of stuff to 2 Rubbermaid bins and 2 backpacks worth of things. That's my all of my possessions fits in the back of a car.
Yeah.
You know, and like, as soon as that happened, the world became so much more open and accessible to me. You know, and I think that's the biggest advice I can give is, like, make your life something you can pack up.
Yeah.
And I know that's intimidating, but, like, do you really need all that stuff?
You don't.
You don't.
That's the answer.
You don't. And then so many of us have parents that have maybe an attic or a basement or a friend that, like, will hold, like, some space stuff for us in a space.
Yeah.
Like,
do that.
Or first
sell
time.
Shit. Use eBay and sell your stuff.
Exactly. And the first time I went, when I was holding on to stuff, my friends held stuff in their basement for me for a little while, and they were cool with that. I threw them $100.
Yeah.
And then I was good to go.
Yeah.
So, like, finding a stopping point for your responsibilities and making sure you're planning to travel, you know? Like, you can either... And I don't want to sound like one of those super conservative people who's just like, you just stop getting your Starbucks every day, and now you're saving money so you can afford healthcare. It's like, that's not how that works.
But it's a viable fucking option.
It's a viable option for traveling if you are not in poverty. You know, and it is difficult nowadays, but there are ways to make that money. Like, for example, living in a place, like I had the benefit of living in Oregon, minimum wage was $12 an hour, and I was a server, which means I made tips, and I made $20-ish an hour in tips, 20 to 30. So that means I'm making $30 to $40 an hour. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's not too hard in that scenario to like put that away. And to get that job, I didn't need a load of qualifications.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want a fucking degree.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people have some food service industry. Yeah. And so I encourage people to look for work that will suit their lifestyle, not just take what they have coming. Because I know a lot of people will get a job and then they won't look for another job until they're so burnt out they want to quit.
Yeah.
Or like they get fired.
Yeah.
And the thing is you should always be looking for another job.
Yeah.
Always.
Always.
Because there's better opportunities out there for you, and your work like is not going to treat you the way that they expect you to treat them. You know, use your sick days, use your time off. Like when you put in 2 weeks, what happens? They take you off the schedule. They don't give you 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You have to give them 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if you don't give them 2 weeks, then they don't give you a positive like review
resume,
to your next employer for your resume. Yeah, so it's really a one-sided thing. So you got to realize that you're the biggest advocate for taking care of yourself financially.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of keeping all of that in mind will help you when it comes to traveling, because you'll be in a place of enablement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. So the message, the answer to that question essentially is, you know, take responsibility for what it is that you can take responsibility for.
Uh-huh.
Adapt a minimalistic mindset. Sell your shit, and then you know, if you want to travel and you feel like you're not gonna do it right away, then you have a year or two, depending on, you know, how old you are. I think it's never too late to travel. You could be 40.
Oh, absolutely not.
And stay for 2 years and be 42 and still be young to travel. I've met 40, 50 year olds out traveling.
Easy.
80 year olds traveling.
I mean, what happens when you're 70? You fucking buy an RV, you live out of that, and travel
exactly
around the country.
Like, so you're gonna end up traveling.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, is everybody wants to do it. Mm-hmm. They just have a different plan for how to do it. And every older person that I've met traveling tells me it's a good thing you're doing it while you're young.
Yeah.
You know, because A, you're just going to keep doing it your whole life and it'll be your lifestyle. But B, if you wait until you're old, all the stuff that you want to do, like scuba diving and rock climbing and stuff while you're traveling,
your joints are not going to let you.
Exactly. And so, you know, do it while you can.
Yeah, I love that. So save money. This is one thing that I really want to touch on. If you want to travel, work for a year with that intention in mind. Save money for a year. Don't buy the $7 Starbucks. Yeah. You know, live
don't
in a
go
cheap
to the
place.
Show. Don't
go to
you
know, minimalistic mindset for a year, and then grab that chunk of money. And you don't. This is one of the things that surprised the fuck out of me when I first came here. I don't need that much money.
Yeah,
I came here with $4,000 when we were two people, and we've survived for, you know, 4 months, right?
Yeah.
And if I was alone, which most travelers travel alone, you don't need that much money. Like,
I mean, you can buy a meal for 35 baht, which is $1.
It's $1.
You can spend $5 a day, and that will cover everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to open people's minds. Like, for people that want to travel, this is the reality of travel. Don't let anybody that haven't traveled tell you how to travel, because they don't know.
Yeah.
That's why we should start this fucking podcast.
and on top of that, a few things about like finances and traveling.
Mm-hmm.
One is there are ways you can do travel without it being 100% out of your dime. Like if you're working with a charity and you want to go do something, right?
Yeah.
Make sure A, that you're doing something that's not just volunteerism. And if you do something volunteeristy, which I've done,
mm-hmm.
make sure that you understand that that's what it is, and that you're not just doing this whole altruistic high ground of, oh, look at me doing the thing and posting on social media that I'm such a good person working with kids and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And if you are, and, you know, you've got a good community, you can fundraise for that. People will send you out into the world to go do good things.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah.
You know, and I fundraised and made $1,000 to go do that.
Me too.
Yeah. And so if you can find a reason to travel and a reason that people would want to support you, then they will. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is figure out what you have to offer that you can offer in more places than where you're at home. So, for example, I perform and I, like, teach, right?
Mm-hmm.
All over the world, there are studios that want guest teachers. There are, like, places like Paradise that will want a flow teacher for a while. Yoga teachers' jobs can be found all over the place. You can, you know, if you're a tattoo artist,
so
you can go into a tattoo studio and ask them if they want to host you for a month, and a lot of them will.
Yeah, if you own a camera and know how to take pictures or want to make videos, then that's another thing, right?
I have a cousin who cuts hair, and she does these awesome exotic styles with crazy colors and the crazy cuts.
You can do that anywhere in the world.
You can do that anywhere in the world. The thing is you go to like some remote places in South America or Asia, all the people who live there have internet. They all want that, but they don't have access to it. Mm-hmm. So if you go to a hair salon and you're the only thing in town and you're only there for a month, everyone who's ever had that aesthetic in mind is going to come to you.
Yeah.
You're going to make a bunch of money, and then you use that money for the next 3-4 months.
So you can run out of money and, you know, grab your skills and barter and then be able to continue traveling.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Totally.
Here, right?
And I feel like there's this thing about, oh, yeah, travelers, they just go to somewhere sleepy and chill for a while. And all they do is, like, go save money so they can go do nothing. And the thing is, like, you're not doing nothing while you're traveling. But also, what the fuck is wrong with that? Like, travelers are some of the hardest working people I know.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go home and work, like, a little while to like make sure they're making enough money for their bills. They go and work every hustle they can as long as they can to save as much as they can
so they can travel. Yeah.
You know, and every minute of that they earn.
It's a lifestyle. Yeah.
It's a lifestyle.
That's why people get so confused. They're not confused necessarily, but like create fear in themselves when they want to like go travel. Because most people that want to travel already have a different kind of lifestyle. They're like they go to school or they have this education or they have to go to this like cubicle job and they're like, how am I going to be able to travel with all these things? Well, you need to completely change your mindset about it. You got to change your lifestyle.
Yeah, get rid of those things.
Yep. You got to completely change that. I love that. All right. Let's step back a little bit. So I like destinations. There's so many things that I have, you know, just by traveling, there's more and more things that I want to see, right? We even talked on that when we were talking about Buddhas. You know, remember we talked about Buddhas, the biggest Buddhas in the world?
Yep.
I looked that up. And, you know, there's a list of fucking Buddhas. I'm like, I need to go see these things, right? So what are some destinations that you've been to that you wish that everyone on Earth could see?
Okay, so there's a few of them. And kind of on this note, I'm just going to digress just a little bit.
Yeah.
Traveling with a sense of purpose is always better than aimlessly wandering. Because aimlessly wandering is not bad, and you will see all sorts of stuff, and you'll get into cool scenarios as long as you let yourself be open to opportunity. However, having a rough goal of like, I'm in this city, I want to go see the thing on the other side of the city, I'm going to walk there and let myself get distracted by all the ooh shiny things on the way.
Yeah.
Having that one little goal will make you feel way more than just, I'm walking around and I don't know what to do.
Like, just waiting for something to excite me.
Exactly. Or, yeah. And so, you know, figuring out what that kind of sense of purpose when you're traveling, either whether it's visiting these things I'm going to talk about or doing something or looking for an experience, like that will set
that's
the tone.
That's a good piece of tone. Yeah, I love that.
So some of the things, and they're more experiences to seek out, not just specific things to see. But when I was in India, I was in Varanasi, which is like a very holy city on the Ganges River.
Cool.
And it is absolutely beautiful. Lots of temples to explore. A lot of like Indian heritage and culture there that you can really see. And I happened to be there for Holi, which, if you guys don't know, it's that Indian festival celebration where it's known as like the paint festival.
Oh, the color thing.
The color thing, you see like people throwing paint and all this stuff. And let me tell you, that was one of the most fun times I've ever had. And it's done differently depending on who you are and where you're at. Varanasi was a crazy place to do it because the party was just raging and raging. And what they do at night is the night beforehand, they create these giant bonfires on every street corner in the entire city and light them on fire. And if you see a fire on a street corner, it means there's a giant speaker system set up there and everyone's dancing. So you'll literally walk around the city from giant bonfire to giant bonfire, seeing these huge parties in all these different places. And it's so cool to watch them let loose because India has a very conservative culture. And so this is kind of like somebody like affectionately called this the day that God's not watching, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so
recording a podcast.
So like it really is. People kind of like let go there. So like there's a lot of like anti-gay sentiment in India. However, on that day, you'll see men making out with each other. No one's batting an eye because that's the day it's acceptable.
That's
it's this
so
weird purge.
Interesting.
Yeah, and like being
like
around
a sexual
that energy.
Purge.
Yeah, and being around that energy of catharsis for thousands of people who live in such a conservative mindset is really interesting. Everyone's so happy. Everyone feels like liberated.
Yeah.
And you really don't get to see that. And the kids, they interact in this in a really interesting way. Somebody at some point started the culture of putting the paint in water guns. And so the kids stay up on the rooftops because all the partners.
Oh, that's so
cool. And they
cool.
squirt down at adults with water guns. And they'll be in, like, the side streets with water balloons and, like, plastic bags filled with water and paint. And they'll just ambush you. These kids are no joke setting up traps. Like, that's I remember so I was trying cool. to get to a friend's house, and we were, like, looking for, like, a way that we're not just going to get hammered in paint.
Yeah.
And there's this one alleyway where this little girl who was, like, wearing, like, this really nice dress and didn't look at painted or anything like that, I'm like, oh, this is probably pretty safe. So I'm following her down, and then all of a sudden she books it and starts running down the thing, and I was like, huh, kid, little, weird little kid. And then I look to the side, and I look on both the walls, and there's these silhouettes of people, and they just paint on the wall. And I'm like, no. And I look up, and there's, like, 12 kids with 5-gallon buckets filled with paint,
oh
going
God.
Over the top of these 3-story buildings, and they just crash that's on hilarious. Us. And then as soon as that happens, a huge army of children turns the corner and starts stampeding towards us with water pistols and water balloons, literally yelling, squirting us with, like, paint, throwing paint water.
That is so balloons, cool.
And we're booking it out of there. We're like, no, and the kids are catching up, and they're getting us. And eventually, we get out, we get back, and we're like, you know what? Partying with the adults and dancing and drinking and all that stuff, that was fun. But let's, like, load up with some water balloons and some water guns. Let's get these kids back.
Yeah.
So we went around, like, getting an army of adults and, like filling water balloons, putting them in our backpacks. And we had 2 backpacks full, like, 200 water balloons. And, like, water guns filled with paint. And we started looking for these kids. Eventually, we find the alleyway. We find the kids. And we, like, get into this, like, little street kind of close quarters combat with them and playing with them. And it was just a really fun time. Eventually, they run out of water balloons and we don't. So we start chasing them like they had us. We're hawking these water balloons. We're going there. All of a sudden, we turn a corner and there is, I shit you not, 50 kids at this little water spigot in this other hose, refilling their guns, getting new paint. And they're like, it was like their armory. And so we turn the corner and all the kids look at us and it was like, it was like the oh shit moment. Like, we just stumbled upon their huge amount of reinforcements. And so the kids just rush us, and we're just, like, outnumbered 10-1, like, fighting back. People just paint us with water. Eventually, we run away.
That's so funny.
Everyone's cool. laughing. Everyone, it was the time of my life.
And this is one time a year?
One time a year. Holy Festival.
Holy Festival.
Holy. I think it's H-O-L-I.
Explain to me the paints, because what I imagine, you know, you'll be walking, as you're explaining, uh-huh. you run down these streets, you're being tossed paint at.
Uh-huh.
Like, you get paint in your fucking mouth, in your
everything,
eyes.
Everything.
You're so covered. How does this taste? Like, what is it? What is the paint? What is that?
So, it's almost like, the way I thought of it was like Indian fireworks, right? Okay. So, we have our New Year's celebration. What do? We explode giant things in the sky. Really colorful. Yeah. It's like our reset. Yeah. It's our new year.
Yeah.
So, for them, they have that similar thing with their paint. Like, it's very colorful. It's very festive. And it's explosive. And the paint's in the air. And people are, like, throwing. And, you know, people will come up to you and they'll literally just smudge some paint on your face. And then other people will come up to you and they'll throw paint in the air and it'll just kind of rain down on everybody. And, you know, another kid will just come up to you and spray you with a water gun in your shirt. And, like, I remember I was
it's
like...
It's not damaging, I would imagine. Like, it's not something that it's painful if you get it in your eyes or...
It's not unpainful. It's yeah. let me put it this way. You're in India. This is mass-produced paint for, like, the most populated country yeah. in the world. And yeah. the entire country is yeah. celebrating. So yeah. I imagine that it might not be non-toxic mm-hmm. in some cases. I don't know. You just yeah. find street vendors with plastic bags full of this yeah. stuff. So I got no clue.
Yeah.
But, like, one day out of the year ain't going to hurt you, and the experience you get out of it is just absolute. If that took,
that sounds sick.
If that took a week off my life, it was damn worth it.
Yeah.
You know what
is
I mean?
Is it a whole week?
No. It was one day. But what I'm saying is, like, if I inhaled some pain or something, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing is, it's a communal mindset. Everyone's, like, on that same page. I remember when I was in the thick of it, I was on the 3rd story of a building, and I saw this guy on a motorbike, and there's a guy behind him on the motorbike, and I'm like, I'm going to throw this water balloon at them. I don't know what possessed me to. I was just, like, in the spirit of it, I guess. Or I don't know. I was being juvenile. I was playing with kids all day.
Yeah.
I throw a water balloon from 3 stories up. It hits the driver on the temple, in the forehead.
Wow.
Sploosh, all over. He stops on his scooter. looks around the rooftop to see where it came from. Takes his helmet off. Looks up and sees me. And you know what he does? He puts his hands up like this and he goes, "Happy holidays!"
That's amazing.
And I was like, I love this place. I love Indian people. They're so nice and welcoming. And
that's so cool.
What's cool is that was the best of it, but really in India, the hospitality I encountered and the amount of, like, welcoming. It's a part of their culture. It's like if you're a traveler and a visitor,
Hindus,
you're a
right?
guest. Yeah, you're a guest. Well, India has Hinduism,
all
Muslim, Christianity,
Muslim,
Islam.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's such a big country.
Like Buddhism.
Yeah.
But yeah, to them, you are a guest, mm-hmm. and they treat you like a guest, and it's beautiful.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I really want to go to India. I've connected with some people from India through social media. I meet people here every single day that have been to India and be like, you need to go to India.
It's a place of extreme high highs and low lows.
Yeah.
You know, because you'll see some of the most spiritual, like, stuff, hear some of the most wise words, and have, like, some really deep connected things and really learn some stuff about yourself and the world. But then you'll step outside and it'll be ankle deep trash with mangy street animals and homelessness rampant and beggars. And, and you're just like... Like, I was in this beautiful, ornate, opulent temple where they were preaching about how you are the universe, and the universe is you, and you need to take care of your body because it's sacred, and then you walk out and see how they treat the earth. And it's it's this weird extremism of high highs and low lows, and so anyone going to India, you need to be ready for it.
Yeah,
it's emotionally taxing in both ways, and you need to go to not just the tourist destinations. You need to go see more than the Taj Mahal.
Unbeaten path,
you need to, you need to, like, see how people live, and you need to really, like think about it and spend some time getting to know these people.
Yeah, because it gives you new perspective, and it helps you throughout your life as well. Like, even just being here in Thailand, seeing people in the rice fields, you know, living in these shacks alongside the rice fields. It's
That's where they live.
Holy shit. Exactly. And I'm like, it gives you such perspective. I keep, like, thinking about me being born in Norway when I could have been born in Chile, and if I was born in Chile, they would still be off worse, right?
Yeah.
So it's just crazy to not crazy. It's more like rewarding, I think. Even though it can be emotionally taxing, it's truly, you know, it gives you new perspective, and it helps. I believe it has helped me be more thankful for life.
Yeah.
Like, be more grateful for what I have. That's what's rewarding with traveling, when it comes to me at least. I want to ask you this question. This is about your bucket list, and I know that you've probably crossed off a lot of things on it already. I have certainly throughout this travel. Mm-hmm. So what's your next item on your bucket list? There's probably been many, but which one do you think you're going to cross off next?
I don't, like, you know, there's the small bucket list items and the major bucket list items, type Helios. I am so surprised that I'm 28 and I still have not gone skydiving.
Really?
Yeah, like, I've gone bungee jumping, I've gone cave spelunking 1.5 kilometers underground, I've gone shark cage diving.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I've done so much shit. I've, like, spun fire standing in water, going underwater to do a buzzsaw with the flames above.
That's awesome.
Like, I've played with phytoplankton in a thunderstorm out,
that's
like,
so cool.
Cambodia. I've been in fucking monsoons in India. Like, I've done crazy shit.
Yeah.
Never gone skydiving, and I don't know why. Like, it's just...
And you want to go skydiving.
The time has not happened yet, but I feel like that's one of the big bucket list items that everyone
that's
has.
Cool. Yeah. And, I went skydiving in Florida. It was not as exciting, you know, because it's fucking flat.
Yeah.
But we did a 14,000 feet, I think. I think we actually did 11, and that was a minute free fall.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a minute of gasping air.
Yeah.
You try to fucking breathe, right? Yeah. And then I only did it once, but you can only also do 18,000 feet, I think.
Yeah.
Which is the highest, you know, commercial
available
that you can do, like, unprofessionally.
Yeah.
And that's 2.5 minutes of free fall.
Yeah.
And that's fucking
that's
insane.
That's a lot.
I thought 60 seconds was long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was
time
my first
down.
Time. I didn't, yeah.
Time dilation is a huge thing.
I had no clue what I was going in for. I was like, I was just going to hop out of a fucking plane.
Pull
you know, somebody, like, pushed me out, and then we do some fucking spins around, and then, like, pull your hands out, and then, you know, you're supposed to try to breathe for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Which they didn't tell you that you would.
Yeah.
It's more like you're going to go into this in survival mode. You're going to survive, but, you know, it's going to be somewhat uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, let's go back to, like, to home a little bit. What's the person, this can be a simple, like, a one word, one sentence answer, so I can do, like, many.
Have you met me?
yeah, I have. who is the person at home you miss the most?
Oh, man, that's such a loaded question.
Yeah.
My friends are going to hear this podcast and be like, you said this person. I thought we were tied.
Yeah. You can do a safe one. You can just, like, be your mom or dad or something.
My mom!
My mama!
The person I miss most at home.
Because you have your partner here, which helps a lot when it comes to, like, missing.
Yeah.
Like, you have somebody to love you. like on
one
the road
of the reasons
is such a good thing.
I miss him more so than I would other people isn't mm-hmm. because I care about him more.
Of course not.
But my buddy Peter is one of my best friends in the whole world.
That's cool.
And him and his partner Bailey, who I also love, uh-huh. are starting a family. And
oh,
Bailey
nice.
Is about to give birth. Like, she's right at that edge. And
damn.
Yeah, and like, I wish I was there for that.
That's cool.
I miss him, I miss her, and they're starting a family, which I don't even know if I'll ever get to that point in my life. You know, maybe I will, maybe I won't, but I know that I'm going to be an uncle to their kid and do my best damn job that I can.
Yeah.
And
I've heard that people that want to have kids, you know, when somebody they know have kids, that they don't need to because I have this other kid
yeah,
that
yeah.
I can take care of.
Yeah, I'm an uncle so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I miss him a lot and I miss her and I really wish I was there to experience
cool.
that journey with
so
them.
She's like about to pop.
Oh, yeah.
She's like Kayla.
Yeah, just like,
that's,
yeah.
She's 2.5 months in now.
Yep.
Not 2.5, 8.5 months in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fucking insane. So what, and then what home comfort do you miss the most?
Home comfort. Tani mentioned one yesterday, and I didn't realize, but,
how much you miss it?
How much I miss it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize I didn't have it until she said it, but, like, a couch.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, all the seating here is wood.
Yeah.
Or on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, and the cushions are nice, and it's loungy
yeah.
and stuff, but, like, there's no sofas.
Interesting.
There's not a single
yeah.
couch.
I just fucking realized that, too.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
like,
so
I
weird.
Didn't realize it until she said it, and I was like, actually, though,
yeah.
sitting on a couch sounds nice.
It does sound nice. What food from home do you miss the most?
You can get a lot of those out here, actually. One that I miss the most that I actually missed before I even left this country, because it's a regional dish in the U.S., is this thing called green chili in Colorado.
Hmm.
And it's like green chilies you can get from Arizona or Utah, Arizona, like kind of southeast or southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of places have that. But chili made with green chilies is so good. And they would smother burritos in it and put it inside of burritos. And, oh, my God, it was flavorful. It was a little spicy.
Nice.
It changed depending on what family owned the restaurant. And
oh,
like,
that's cool.
Oh, it's so good. And,
yeah.
like, any of those, like, regional foods that, like, you know, changes depending on the recipe of the people who make it, like
yeah.
where it's not consistent, that's my favorite.
Yeah,
to try that
cool.
out in different places. Like up here, it's cow soy.
Cow soy, man. Fuck. That's something that I've definitely fallen in love with.
Yeah, you're going to miss it.
I am going to fucking miss it. Unless I learn how to make it, or maybe even Kayla is going to, like, you know, learn how to make it, which would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to definitely find, like, a Thai restaurant in Florida somewhere when I move there.
Ask them to make it.
Yeah.
You could literally tell them. They have all the things to make it.
Yeah.
If you, like, learn how to make it, like, and you just be like, hey, can I... like, get to know you guys and
yeah.
maybe fucks with you guys in the kitchen. You know?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely an opportunity.
Hit that Thai with a really heavy American accent and be like, sabai di mai.
Yeah. Which means, how are you, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Then you say sabai di kap, which means I'm good, right?
Sabai di mai, so sabai means good.
Uh-huh.
Sabai means, like, I'm doing well, like, good.
Okay.
D means just good. So you're basically being, like, good, yeah?
Yeah.
You're, like, good, saying good in two different words.
Languages
for
is
it.
So weird, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, for example, one of my favorite Thai words is
this is one of the questions I wanted to ask. Like, this really, how many, what was it? How many foreign words do you know?
Yeah, so I try to pick up a little bit, especially if I'm spending a lot of time in that country.
Yeah.
You know. And so, like, I've got a few written down here for Thai that are my favorite.
Cool.
And Ryan has helped me with this because he's taking Thai classes.
Yeah.
But Nam Khana is what they call ice. And what that translates to is hard water.
What?
Their
really?
Word for ice is hard water.
That's so cool.
I love it. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, me too.
It's no nonsense. It's like, we don't need a word for that. It's just
yeah,
hard water.
It's just hard water.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I didn't know.
So that kind of thing, like, for example, the way that they say, like you're a very loving person,
uh-huh.
And I'm probably butchering this, but it's Kun Mi Nam Jai. Kun uh-huh. Mi Nam Jai. And uh-huh. that means you have water heart.
Hmm.
Like, you have a heart that flows like water.
That's cool.
And, like, that's how they say you're a loving person.
Oh,
and
that's
it's very
awesome.
Poetic, but, like, and that's not someone being poetic, that's just how they say it.
That's how they say it.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And so it's a poetic language, and it's a poetic culture, and you would never know this if you didn't deconstruct the language.
Yeah.
Because not only do I like learning, oh, this is what this means.
Yeah.
I like learning, this is why it means that.
Yeah. I love that. And since I speak three languages, you know, I've gotten that taste. of like how you say different things in Norwegian. Like up until I started teaching Kayla a little bit of Norwegian, I realized that we speak very simply. That's what she said. She's like, "Oh, you." It's literally straight up. Like it's. I wouldn't be able to give you an example now, but you know, it's just a straight up simple way to say things.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let's see.
Yeah. Well, like for example, in English, right? You would say, "I have a car."
Mm-hmm.
You know. You don't really need to say anything more than I own a car.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, but we have all of these extra words that we throw in there and ways that we say it to make sense contextually.
Yeah.
And like, it's not really needed because the context is usually given when you're having the conversation.
Yeah. So we're going to, we're closing up on an hour and we said an hour, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to find...
that was a quick hour.
Yeah, right. We could do another one before I leave. I'm gonna ask you one more question that is a little bit personal.
All right.
And then I'm gonna ask you like a series of questions, which is like either or.
It's like 5.5 inches.
Yeah.
Wait, is that on it?
Yeah. That's perfect. So, what has surprised you about yourself?
When I found out the international was 4.5 inches, I'm just kidding. in case you haven't realized by now, I'm very crude. if you're listening, you know, just be ready. What has surprised me about myself? You know, when I grew up, like, I love my mom very much, but she's kind of an anxious person. And I grew up being very anxious. And in America, I think that's a little normalized, and so I never quite realized how much different in terms of mental health I really was compared to like what I would say the average person was.
Yeah.
And I think traveling and seeing different cultures and just how they live daily and like, you know, what they have versus what they're concerned about.
Yeah.
It really puts into perspective all the things I worry about and why it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You know?
And it comes down to all worry. Like,
all worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, some people don't know where their next meal is coming from, and they're smiling.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm freaking out if, like, I'm $10 short on rent. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
Like, or if I'm $100 over on rent, and I've got to buy the skin of my... You know, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. like, and sometimes it's not even that. That's actually kind of an important thing. Like,
yeah.
I'm stressed out about stupid shit. Like, something I said a year ago in some random conversation with a person I'll never meet again.
Yeah.
That keeps me up at night. You know, So... I think being exposed to not only other travelers, but also just like the local cultures of how they feel, think, and interact every day, and seeing different modalities of just perception in mm-hmm. everyday life has really mm-hmm. put into perspective like the things that matter to me and what should matter to me, and it has done wonders for my mental health, and also just for like my philosophical understanding of the world.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that is the biggest surprise, because when I thought I was traveling, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll get some worldview. And, like, you don't really understand what is worldview. Yeah, what does that mean?
It's perspective. Like, you can't change your perspective until you actually experience it.
Yeah, and you can't quantify what that is. You can't explain to anybody what that change is, because it's different for everyone, too.
It's like somebody that is 40 trying to explain to one that is 25 how it feels to be 40. You won't know until you're fucking 40, right?
Yeah.
You can try to imagine it, but you can't, right?
I mean, I could. Like, I imagine when I'm 40 and I was talking to somebody who's 25, I would say, you feel like you're 25 in a body that doesn't work very well.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, yeah. Like everyone I talk to who's older is just like, there's nothing to being older, but just now you're older.
Yeah.
Like, you don't magically change as a human. You don't.
Yeah.
It's like, I remember
you
when
feel
I...
the same way. It's just
I remember when I lost my virginity, right? I thought I was going to feel different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a man now. And I have telekinesis or something like it would happen.
I can read women.
Yeah, like something would happen and I would feel somehow different, you know? Like, oh, I'm not a virgin anymore. That means, like, now I'm magically different. I'm an adult or I'm this. And, like, mm-hmm. what the fuck does that mean? What is being an adult, really?
Yeah.
You know? And it's the same kind of a thing.
It's a label.
It's a label.
Yeah.
And so, like, the only real change comes from experience and from people impacting your perception and your worldview. And so I think that's biggest thing that came from traveling.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I realized how cool that question is, actually.
Yeah, that's a great question.
That's awesome. So now we're going to go to that sequence of questions. We're going to pick one, okay?
All right.
So we go train or bus?
Oh, man. Train.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
When it comes to toilets, squats or Western?
Whichever one has a bum gun. Let me tell you this.
I like the bum gun, man. It's a great thing.
Nobody tells you this when you come to Asia or like leave the U.S., but like imagine, for those of you at home who don't know if you want to travel or not, imagine every shit you take for the rest of your life only needing one wipe.
Yeah.
It's fucking true. If somebody told me that, I would have moved here long ago.
It's the fucking truth.
It's the truth. It's so good.
It's great. It's awesome. Good. Fan or air conditioning?
Air conditioning. Depends on the humidity.
Yeah, I'm weirdly not using anything right now.
Yeah.
Because when Kayla first left, I forgot to put the fan on for the first 5 days.
It's good at night.
Yeah, it's good
at night. Yeah. Air conditioning is, it feels better, but the thing is if you use air conditioning, I guarantee you'll feel worse during the day.
Yeah, because your mucus and fucking, that's fans. I hate that. Yeah, I agree, fan. Strict schedule or go with the flow?
Go with the flow.
Beer or wine?
Oh, pot.
That's a viable answer.
I don't even smoke pot, but like if you're gonna pick.
City or countryside?
Countryside.
Window or aisle seat?
Oh, window.
Bungee jumping, I heard you say it. Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Solo travel or group travel?
Oh, solo travel.
Solo travel. Solo,
if you're with a group, you won't leave the group. Yeah. It's harder to meet new people. If you're alone, you'll have moments. You'll be forced to. Yeah. And you'll have moments of loneliness, but that's something you want to confront with yourself.
Yes. You want to experience
the growth
that.
Comes from solo travel.
Yeah, I agree.
Group travel's fun, and it's way more touristy feeling.
Yeah.
And it's more like experiencing something. Doing what the best thing to do is to go with a group and then leave them.
Yeah.
Like go with your friends to another country and then do your own thing every so often, every couple of days, and don't feel like you need to stay with them. But it's nice to have a sense of community to come back to.
Yeah.
That's why Flow Arts is cool, is because I can do solo travel but not feel like I'm solo.
Yeah.
You know, so finding that nice mix is important.
Like nice little balance right there. I love that. Yeah, I feel the same way. And then I you know, podcasts, you know, have like a question that they ask all the guests. And I've created this question that I'm going to ask everybody for the next 1,000 episodes of this podcast. This is the very first one.
Ooh.
I have tried to answer this question by myself, and it's hard. Personally, I have no clue what people are gonna say because it's just so broad, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's, if the entire world was watching or listening right now, what would you say?
Oh, come on! Oh, come on!
Because it's a weird question. And the reason I find it interesting is because, if you put yourself in the position in which you have the entire world watching you at this very second, what would you fucking say? Some people would freak the fuck out, right?
No, I think, you know, I want to say something cheesy like, love one another. Or
yeah,
like,
but that's,
you know,
great.
That's great.
Awesome.
That's great. But like, the thing is like, that's going to fall on deaf ears.
Yeah.
Like, everyone says that shit. Like, it doesn't do anything. I want to say something to everybody that's impactful, that means something, and that will actually change something. So as much as it is like, you know, love everyone else, I don't think that's going to change because you heard that.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I would want everyone to do is to listen to other people and not just hear them.
Yeah.
And some people don't even hear other people. I think listening and not waiting to respond, listening and internalize what other people think, even if you don't agree with it, is a skill that not only I had to learn, but I notice a lot of people need to learn.
Yeah.
And I think by listening to one another and by conceptualizing what the other one has to say, even if we don't agree, we're all going to come to a better place of understanding that as humans, we are all on the same team.
Yeah.
None of us are on the opposite side of the spectrum, on the opposite team. We just think about going about being on the same team a different way.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there are those people out there who are greedy and they don't want what you want.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people, for example, if we were going to talk about it in a political way or something, like, they just have a different concept of how to achieve happiness for the majority of people the same way that you do.
Mm-hmm.
They just think of going about it a different way, and that comes from their history.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you agree with it or not, I guarantee you they'll be more human to you if you listen to them.
Yeah, that's a beautiful. I'm so glad I asked you that question. Thank you so much for doing this with me, brother.
Yeah, and thank you, man. That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you for listening, guys, and I'll see you in the next.